Salutations, friends, and welcome back to The Arcade. We are your video game podcast, here with you for the week of Friday, July 8th of the year 2016. How's it going, ladies and gentlemen? We thank you so much for joining us once again here on the program, as we took last week off in observance of both the Canada Day holiday here in our home and native land of Canada, and also for the Independence Day weekend, the 4th of July holiday that followed just a few days after. On Monday, we took the week off to observe the national holiday, have an extra day off, get some sun, sand, surf, sweat. I can't think of other S things. Summer. Smudge. I'm running out of S things. But anyway, I'm Mike the Legend, who is now with a bit more sun-kissed, skin to his self on his arms. Obviously, that makes one of us here on the program.
Indeed, as the other part of this program, who is a little bit more vampiric in nature, at least when it comes to the sun exposure.
Certainly you're doing your best to avoid the sun.
Yes, because the sun doesn't like me. I'll get to that in a moment. This week I'm Dennis, the man who wonders if you really gotta catch them all. And I'll get back to that point about the sun in a second,
but
my nickname is regarding the release of the Pokemon Go game.
Yes, the mobile game that seems to be sweeping across Asia, Australia, into the United States of America, and just spottily appearing in parts around the globe.
Yes, but with the release of the game, it's kind of done some weird stuff. I mean, apparently most of like the gyms are sort of located, they try to locate the gyms around landmarks.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in like a smaller town or something, your landmarks are going to be churches and police stations more typically than not. So that sort of led to a lot of people having to go to churches and police stations who don't normally have to go to churches and police stations. And my question is, where does that stop? How far is this going to go? What's going to happen once you've cleared out all the Pokemon in your area? How much crazier situations is this Pokemon Go app going to lead you into?
Yes, once you've gone into the church, once you've gone into the police station, do you have to go into the morgue to get the ghost Pokemon?
Or? Do you have to wander into the bad part of town and get shot up by some gang because you're on their turf? All for a Bulbasaur or whatever?
Maybe. Do you have to go into the middle of whatever lake in your town to get a Dragonair? A Dragonite, perhaps?
Yes.
Some sort of large water-based Pokemon?
Yes. A Staryu?
Yes, perhaps. Where do you have to go to get the Mewtwo's in the game?
Oh my god.
Is that only available if you're on the International Space Station? There's only 6 people at a time who could potentially ever get that Pokemon.
Well, you know.
But man, trading with them feels so good.
What do you have to trade someone like that to get?
I don't.
It's like, I've been to outer space. What can you possibly give me? Love?
No. Love is just an abstract concept. It doesn't knock down stuff.
Yes.
I don't know, but it's very entertaining hearing the tales of, stories come out of, I believe, a police district, police headquarters somewhere in Australia. I don't remember where. It's all the same down there. Sorry, Australia. We love you, but we're so many miles away.
Yeah, I don't have any sort of concept of either how big you are as a country or how rural some of your towns are as towns. I have no idea.
None whatsoever. And I'm sure they have the same lack of ability to conceptualize the space and width and vastness of Canada as we do their country as well. But the commander-in-chief of one police district, putting out the warning or, advisory to people to stop coming into the police station when they don't have to.
Yeah.
And that they can just get the Pokemon that's been pinned to their location, their building, simply by being in the general vicinity.
Yes, and kudos to their social media team for knowing what the Pokemon was and offering tips to players, who want to get the Pokemon more speedily, because that is truly a way to help the community. You're doing your job, police force over there.
Public service.
Yes.
Done right.
Indeed. But it's better than, you know, bashing skulls for no reason, I suppose. Like,
it depends on the part of the world.
Yep.
But also, I believe they put out an advisory as well. Just recommending to people that they look up from their phone every once in a while now that the game is out.
Especially when you're crossing the street. Advisable.
It certainly is. There are not Pokemon Pinto cars. You don't have to worry about that.
Yes.
In fact, that is a car coming at you. Not any sort of Pokemon you can try and catch. You can't catch a car.
No. No, you can't.
So just go to the other side, cross when the, you know, walking man tells you to, stop when the hand tells you to.
Yes, or the don't walk sign if,
or don't walk.
If they have those in Australia still, I'm not sure. But yeah,
so it's,
conversely, the other funny upshoot is seeing the various tweets of people saying, I haven't been to church in years, but if it means getting Pokemon. Now, that was funny to me.
This could really be the boon the Catholic Church has been looking for. Yeah, it's really hit
they really need to find a way to bring young people back in.
They do.
But hey, you know, young people like Pokemon.
They do.
The Catholic Church wants young people in the church.
Just got to keep it going. So hey, Pokemon, I believe I read a story today of churches offering free Wi-Fi in their premises. Free access points of Wi-Fi.
Yes, but remember, Jesus saves your keystrokes.
Touche. And I'm sure there are some sects of Christianity and religion that will say that Pokemon have been around for 6,000 years.
Indeed.
They were on Noah's Ark.
Yes.
Which they weren't.
No.
Just
no,
like dinosaurs weren't.
No, they weren't. Some would even argue that Noah's Ark wasn't a real thing.
That's like saying the Love Boat wasn't a real thing. Come on. It was on our TVs every week in the 70s.
Fair enough.
Proof enough. Fair enough.
Yes.
But we, as I said, we took last week off to recuperate from E3 because that is just a journey through the big gaming news that comes out from the Los Angeles Convention Center over the course of several days, and it takes a while to get through. So we just also needed to take a breath last week. As we said, enjoy Canada Day. And in my case, enjoy the sun. In your case, hide from the sun at every possible turn.
Yes. You know, some people go out, get a tan.
Just a nice healthy glow.
But then there's those of us who don't tan, who burn right away. And instead of, you know, having their burn turn into a tan, it just goes right back to being white. Yeah, I'm one of those people. So, what you telling me who, once you get some sun, isn't really helpful. It's never been. It's never going to be. So, yeah, you can probably stop. Thanks.
Oh, you have that Welsh skin that just says, nope, no sun for me, thanks. I'm just going to shed you right away.
Yes, somewhere in the UK, my skin has Brexited long ago.
Is that what happens every time you're just shedding your skin? Just, my skin's Brexiting.
Yes. Hashtag Brexit. There it goes.
My skin is now an independent country.
Yes.
Also, oh, man. Disgusting.
Indeed. But,
disgusting and frightening. I do not want to picture you shedding your skin. Just standing there, just peeling it off, just one shot.
No,
like,
I mean,
like Zoidberg and his shell.
Yeah, that's never happened, but.
Thank God. Never let that happen. Never let me be around when that happens.
I've never been sunburned badly enough for that to happen, thankfully. I've had some pretty bad sunburns in my life, but never like that. So, fingers crossed that that never happens.
Fantastic. But speaking of scary and disgusting things, we've spoken on this program before of the eventual robot apocalypse that will befall humanity.
Yes, you know, some sort of singularity type event. I don't know. I have no idea what, you know, is the ultimate upshot of whatever all this crazy AI that we've been developing is, but something scary for sure.
Certainly, and we've spoken about it in here on the program before, and also we see it in the world now with machine learning capabilities, the just continued development cycle that self-driving cars are going through. Those will be on our roads Soon we hear the stories now of Tesla's autopilot in the Tesla Model S. I believe that is being blamed for at least 2 fatalities in vehicular collisions, though I don't know, there could be human error involved on the part of the drivers in there as well.
Yep.
Investigations are continuing, but machines will eventually rise up, enslave us either in some sort of Matrix-type future or our favorite vision, Terminator 2.
Yes, or alternatively, on the other flip side, they will enslave us without us knowing that they're enslaving us because, well, it's just going to be so damn convenient. Yeah, they're doing everything for us until that one day when we realize, oh, we're incapable of doing anything ourselves. Oh, well, oh well.
We lived a life of luxury, but we lived it too well.
Yes.
Like Wally. But before that ever happens, machines are in that horrible future still in the development process. And one of the developments that will help lead us to that horrible robot apocalypse.
A dystopian future, as it were.
Yeah, indeed, has been worked on over at the great bastion of humanity's downfall, MIT. The yes. Massachusetts Institute of Technology, it plays a part in Fallout 4, a dystopian vision of the future.
Yes, the Institute.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, the Institute.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's not always something kosher happening at the Institute.
No. And, you know, no, it's not an anthropomorphized robot of any type yet.
Yet.
But it is another stride in artificial intelligence and machine learning that they've kind of managed to put together here. And this one, this time, involves showing an AI construct hours and hours and hours of video and teaching it what certain events represent, and then later having it figure out what's coming so it can predict what's going to happen in videos.
Mm-hmm.
So this might sound like, that's probably far off. They probably don't have, I think this is still in development, right? They've probably not really made great progress with this yet, have they?
Well, it's far enough along for it to be put to the test, and it's achieved surprisingly decent accuracy, given that this is an early stage of the development cycle for this technology, for this AI construct, for it to be able to predict, well, really what happens next when watching a video. You know, we've all had those moments, say when we're watching a movie or with someone and they're just talking out loud and predicting what's going to happen next. And
yeah,
or maybe they've seen the episode. Maybe they just have some sort of intuitive sense given the characters, the story, and the context of the moment of that program that is being watched. Now a machine can do that.
Yes. Isn't that fun?
Thanks, MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory. Thanks.
Yeah, so what they did was they made it analyze over 600 hours of raw video with no explainers or descriptors. Then this algorithm could then correctly predict the correct action, hugs, handshakes, high fives, kisses, about 43% of the time when shown a video, 1 second before it's actually happening.
So a very small window for it to make a prediction, and it's making an accurate prediction of the moment that follows, the action that follows, 43% of the time. That is less than 50%. It's not great accuracy.
No. But it's still more accurate than some people, I would say.
True. In order to give it the same intuitions on human behavior, the researchers just fed this algorithm and this AI construct hours and hours and hours of YouTube videos. Great.
As well as like various TV series like The Office and Desperate Housewives. And yeah, when given a still frame from any of those videos, the algorithm searches for patterns and recognizes objects, you know, like hands, faces, logos and whatnot, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And then attempts to predict the motion of these things in order to conclude where they'll end up and what they might do there.
So the example given by the researchers is that if two faces end up getting closer and closer together frame by frame, then the machine or the AI is taking that to be a good indicator that a kiss is about to ensue.
Yes.
And that's just another step towards machines learning about love.
Yes. So.
And how humans express love. So then a machine form can express its love in a human form to a human.
Yes.
What a horrible future we're going to. Blade Runner.
Yes. Exactly.
This is bringing us closer to Blade Runner as well.
Oh, man.
So, we're not quite there yet. I mean, ultimately, again, they are still working on the machine learning and predictive capabilities of this algorithm, this AI construct. It's going to be tweaked. It's going to be refined. It's going to help bring about our doom.
Yep. Amongst other things, of course, but doom.
We're going to have fun before that.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, we are.
But perhaps automatons, robots, cyborgs, robot playthings really isn't your bag, and that's unholy, it's sanctimonious, it's not something for you, and instead you just wish to cut yourself off from the world around you, the Blade Runner-esque future of no doubt what will befall our civilization, and just lock yourself in a VR headset.
Yes, and maybe you want that VR headset to kind of bring you back a while into
a simpler time.
A simpler time. When boys were boys and girls were girls and up was up and who knows what was down.
Yes, and a more wholesome time as well.
Yes.
A more pure time.
Yes. So this is our, in case you haven't realized, our second of two ludicrous lead-offs this week.
Indeed, and we now delve into the world of VR, virtual reality headsets, the technology that will continue to be developed and pushed by all the major technology companies this year and for at least the foreseeable future, that will ultimately see how long it lasts beyond that. But with any new technology, it will need content in order to drive adoption. And in addition to just games and TV shows being produced and utilized through these VR headsets, companies now, some companies are taking to producing a specific movie content for virtual reality headsets.
Yes. I mean, most notable is porn, I think, so far. I mean,
certainly.
If porn is going to support a technology, that technology is going to succeed. That's been sort of a historical thing. It's happened, I mean, since the days of VHS and before.
Mm-hmm. VHS, internet, Blu-ray.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as porn says, yep, you have our go-ahead, you know the format's probably going to continue. And no, we're not necessarily talking about porn, even though there was a hilarious, like, if we could just take a quick sidebar, there was
yang to this ying of a story we have upcoming.
Yes, we'll first give you the yang. Let's give you this actual story first.
Okay, yeah. We'll give you the yin.
Keep porn in the back of your mind for a second. Or maybe don't. If you're at work, don't. Maybe if you're particularly Christian, I don't know how you're listening to us. I feel like we've sort of established ourselves somewhat heathenously before. So thanks for continuing on. And
thanks for putting up with us.
Thanks for putting up with us.
And our damned souls.
Yes, and our...
We appreciate your prayers. We feel them in our hearts.
Yes.
They reach to us, but they're not strong enough quite yet. We need more of you to pray for our souls to save us.
Please don't lead them on. Come on.
Sorry. Got on a bit of a tangent. Don't worry. We appreciate them, but unnecessary.
Yes. I appreciate whatever well-wishing and stuff, but so does the people at VRWorks.
And what is VRWorks?
VRWorks is what I think is a Christian 360-degree 4K video production house.
And we're talking about them because they are working in conjunction with Autumn Productions on something called Jesus VR, The Story of Christ.
Yes.
And it's going to be coming to VR platforms in time for Christmas 2016.
Yes, it's a 90-minute film that's going to be available on all major mobile and premium VR platforms, including Google Cardboard, Samsung Gear, Oculus Rift, PlayStation VR, HTC Vive, they're all there.
Everything you can think of.
Yeah, every single thing. no pricing set yet, but Jesus VR, The Story of Christ, is,
it's got some major backing. This isn't just some rural backwoods, preacher getting in on this. No, this is being executive produced by a man named Enzo Sisti, who is a veteran of the film industry whose credits include such movies as The English Patient, as well as Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ.
Yes, the film's religious advisor is Father William Foucault, who was also the consultant, on The Passion of the Christ.
So the men involved do have some pedigree in what they are doing. This film, it was shot back in October of last year, and it was done in 360-degree 4K video on location in Matera, Italy, which was the ancient village that was also used as the setting for The Passion of the Christ. Producers promised that it's going to give you a you-are-there type VR experience for the entirety of Jesus's life. Even those missing years? Probably not.
Yeah, probably not.
But not just his life, also his death.
Yeah.
Which was not G-rated.
It was not G-rated. I would also say it was not a pleasant experience. It was not quick or painless.
No.
It was not really a humane death.
It would be considered torture.
Yes, absolutely. But, yeah, they say that, the producers promise otherwise, that you, will get to see, you know, his baptism all the way up to the Sermon on the Mount, the Last Supper, and the crucifixion. So, yeah.
So the high points, hitting all the classic, notes in there.
Yes. The highs, the lows, the in-betweens.
This movie has everything.
Yes.
Action, drama, suspense, romance. What more do you need?
The crucifixion.
One of the film's executive producers, he said, or David Hansen, who is working on this movie, he's one of the producers of the film. He says in a statement heralding its announcement, quote, "The viewers truly feel they are there with Jesus and his disciples. This is the most powerful story of all time, and virtual reality is the perfect way to tell it." Enzo Sisti also saying in a statement in the press release, quote, "I'm beyond thrilled to be a part of this groundbreaking project. It's as exciting a take on the story of Christ as I've ever seen, and its production values will absolutely set a new benchmark for virtual reality." End quote. So, how about that?
Yeah. Nah. I'd go through some of the people who are playing people, but I don't recognize any of the names. I mean, Tim Fellingham is Jesus. Mish Boyko is Peter. Christian Siritello is Andrew. I don't know who Andrew is.
You're the one who went to Sunday school. Don't look at me.
I don't know. Reese Howells is Judas, and Matteo Carlomagno as John.
With a script written by Andre Van Herdien.
Great. So, coming to a VR headset near you, Christmas 2016.
Jesus VR. The Story of Christ. Now, I understand virtual reality is a new medium that is still going to be going through its development process as people figure out what works, what doesn't, but is this going to give you a first-person experience, say, with the crucifixion? Because...
wouldn't you rather be crucifying Jesus?
Quick time event? Press B to hammer. Press B to hammer. Like, are you just going to at one point experience or see blood coming down in front of your eyes?
After the crown of thorns gets put on?
Like, are you going to look to your left and right and just see, you know, nails in your hands?
Are you going to look to see the other people who are crucified? We'll always look on the bright side of life. Start playing.
We can only hope.
Yes.
But I doubt that.
Yes. Now, is porn still in the back of your mind?
It is it's always there in mine.
Okay, good. So the yang to this story was that...
Yang.
Yang.
Sounds like Wang.
Yes. So within the last week or so, there was actually... I mean, there's a VR porn convention being held in Japan, of all places, because I guess it's the porn epicenter of the world, maybe, or something?
No, because Japan.
Yeah, because Japan. Let's just say that. So there was a VR porn convention being held there, and it had to be shut down because too many people tried to go. I'm choosing my wording carefully here. I didn't necessarily want to say too many people wanted to come.
Because that headline was done to death.
Yes, it was done to death. And
it was beaten till it was raw.
Yes.
Just needed time to rest that headline.
Yes. So, but yeah, so that's another thing that happened with VR. I mean, people are making various attachments that are auxiliary to the VR headset to enhance the experience.
Some of the articles about the story of the shut down VR porn convention in Japan just had very
disturbing and sad imagery. Yes. That's the right way to put it.
It is. You don't even need context for what's happening. Just it just makes you weep for this civilization.
Yeah.
So, like, it's one of those things where you have to look around and be like, we are doomed as a species, right? Is this a sign? The closing down of a VR porn convention because just there was too many people overwhelming it because they just really, really wanted to go see what was up.
Also, who would want to be the second through last person to use any of those devices? That was my main thought. It's like, yeah, fine. Yeah, give it a shot all you want. Fine.
Yep.
No judgment here. I don't care. It's just elaborate masturbation. Fine. But who wants to try a used one of those things?
That's true. You never do buy a used sex toy. That's just not a thing.
Like secondhand porn? Gross? Like,
how hands-on is the experience?
Oh, I think some of them are hands-off, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I don't.
Good. Good.
And I'm going to keep it that way.
Yes.
Oh, man. So, VR, yep, it's not just for games anymore.
No, it's for religious people and people really interested in porn.
For the porn and the church.
Yes.
So that's how you know this technology, this new medium of virtual reality, is going to survive.
Yep.
It's going to be A-okay, folks. Don't worry.
Yes, absolutely fine. Once Christian media and the pornographers pick it up, you're good. And I say that in jest, but it's real. It's true. It's absolutely true. Like, there's no word of a lie there. Like, the Christian media is a kind of vast empire. Same thing with porn. Mm-hmm. Porn's a vast empire. There's a lot of money in both of those different things.
Oh, there very much is, and devout followings for both of them as well.
Indeed.
Worshippers in both sects.
And both sexes. Oh, you can't see my Groucho Marx cigar thing? Anyways, whatever.
It wasn't that good anyway.
Fine.
Well, let's move on and to other, you know, big news items that are worth talking about, which kind of came up over the past week to 2 weeks while we were, I guess, on break, again, taking last week off in observance of Canada Day and the 4th of July.
And this first one we put worth talking about in quotation marks because the story itself is worth talking about because of how ridiculous it is, not because of what they're talking about. It's a two-layered kind of thing where the story inside just makes your head hurt, but the outside story is incredible.
And it's related to a story we've spoken of previously on this program in the year of 2016. It was a ludicrous leadoff a couple weeks back that the news that Tetris, the gaming franchise of Tetramino-shaped pieces falling down, which you then use to make complete lines across the screen, that puzzle game would be turned into a movie.
Yeah, that was crazy enough.
Now we know it's not just going to be a one-off effort. Instead, it's going to be a trilogy.
Yes, now, I had heard rumors about this, but I just kind of dismissed it as being, like, way too crazy and stupid. Like, how could they possibly write one, let alone three movies based on Tetris? Tetris has no story whatsoever. What's, like, why put the word Tetris on your title? You're writing an entirely original movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why call it Tetris at all? That's insane. But, you know, a license is a license, and, you know, if it adds any sort of name value to anyone, it's done its job. And yes, it's confirmed. Tetris is going to be a trilogy, or as some smart people in the marketing departments on the internet have called it, a tetrilogy. Yes. Gotta have that sad trombone sample at the ready to play whenever you need it. And
that's just an ice pick in the brain.
Yes. So, yeah.
So the project is still very much in the early, process of development. It's going under the, name of Untitled Tetris Sci-Fi Project. Oh yes, because it's sci-fi. If you don't remember that part we spoke of earlier, a couple weeks ago on this program, it's a sci-fi based story.
Yeah. You know what would actually be an interesting Tetris movie? The story of how Tetris was made and how it had to, you know, the interesting way it had to be brought out of communist Russia.
Mm-hmm. From behind the Iron Curtain.
Literally behind the Iron Curtain. How it was developed on crappy old, you know, Cold War era computers, became sort of a hit over there, and then there was the weird, like, the whole story of Tetris is a compelling story in and of itself, and I think would make a good documentary or dramatization type movie.
Mm-hmm.
A weird sci-fi movie, just loosely based on the property of Tetris? I don't know what to possibly think.
No one really seems to know what to think, but Larry Kasanoff, one of the executive producers of this project, when speaking to a reporter for Empire Magazine, he's confirmed that, yes, the film would be a trilogy, and it's a trilogy because, quote, the story we conceived is so big. This isn't us splitting the last one of our eight movies into two to wring blood out of the stone. It's just a big story. He later goes on to say of the story that, quote, we're not going to have blocks with feet running around the movie, but it's great that people think so. It sets the bar rather low.
With an exclamation mark.
He's really enthusiastic about people expecting so little from this project.
Yes, he goes on to say, we want the story to be a surprise, but it's a big science fiction movie. I came up with the idea as I was thinking about Tetris and the theme of creating order out of chaos. So we're going to see a generic dystopian thing.
Some sort of war, and Tetris pieces are used to form some ultimate weapon to save a civilization that's on the brink of destruction?
Yes, or, yeah, there are going to be some sort of magical relics or something.
Ooh.
Between five or six. I think I've probably talked about this already.
Probably.
But
refresh our listeners.
Yes, my thought is there's going to be the tetrominoes or relics. Each world has one. There's going to be five or six worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And then all these worlds are at war, but then something happens with some sixth or seventh rogue world that comes in and with a different type of chaos tetromino that doesn't make any sense in the order of things.
It's a piece from Tetris 2.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh, they all have to band together, and then the ultimate payoff of the movie is all the tetrominoes coming together, forming a line, and then peace will happen, or something will disappear, or something will happen when a bunch of things form into a line. That's what, we all know that's going to happen. And if it takes three movies to get there, my God, what are you doing?
Well, perhaps that is the story of the movie, although Larry Kasanoff, also in the interview with Empire Magazine, he spoke of the wild and varied rumors people have put out there about what the basis for a Tetris movie story could be, and he says to that, quote, I guarantee you it's not what you think. No one has come remotely close to figuring out what we're doing, end quote. To which I'm wondering, do they know what they're doing?
I mean, there's been a lot of science fiction movies made over the years. Like, lots of science fiction movies made.
There's been one or two.
And, you know, not a lot of science fiction movies are wholly original anymore.
It's kind of hard to make a new one from the ground up that we haven't seen elements of in other places.
Yeah, and I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. You can still make good stuff with that, but to say that, like, no one's doing what we're doing, even close anymore, it's like, are you Jodorowsky in the 70s trying to make Dune? Like, come on. You're fiddling with a Tetris franchise. What are you talking about? But, I don't know. I'm going to reserve real judgment until it comes out, obviously, but it's hilarious that this is still happening. And it's a trilogy.
And it seems to be just all, like, full steam ahead on this project.
What happens if the first movie tanks?
Well, they'll give it another go. They've got another life.
They have three movies to do stuff with?
I don't know if they're filming all three in one go. It might be, you know, production, post-production release on one, and then just rinse repeat for the following two movies. I don't know if it's a Lord of the Rings-esque project where all three are being filmed in one shot.
Yeah, or maybe that's what they mean by people haven't done this before, by filming three movies at the same time. It's like, no, but Peter Jackson totally did. Twice. Like, actually twice.
It's true. I don't know. I can't imagine. Apparently the casting process is underway in China right now, because China is actually a very big movie market now for video game movies, as evidenced by the Warcraft movie, made pittance in the North American box office. But China, holy crap, so much money. That's not even sarcasm. It actually made a crap ton of money in China.
Well, bear in mind, China is now the biggest video game market in the world.
True.
Ever since it opened up to being a video game market.
And China does like Warcraft.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
So that's a thing. Tetris, I don't know if they have the same connection to it.
I mean, Russia.
That's a logical connection.
Yeah.
But China, under a communist government, so maybe...
That's a loose line to draw, but
it's the only one I've got. It's the best I can do.
We'll see.
Because otherwise there's legitimately no sense for this partnership. But hey, speaking of partnerships that don't seem to make a lot of sense.
Yes.
Let's talk about a company that is a shell of its former self and really just now a name that exists to capitalize on its nostalgic memories its name creates in people's minds. And a member of the Wu-Tang Clan.
Yes, who is, in his own right, a legendary hip-hop producer.
He is. So we're naturally talking about the partnership that was announced just last week between Atari and RZA.
Indeed. A.K.A. Bobby Digital, who's one of his other names that he's gone by.
A.K.A. Robert Fitzgerald Diggs.
Indeed.
But yes, it was announced that Atari is planning to collaborate with RZA, the RZA, a RZA. But I'm going to go with RZA.
Prince Rakim?
Could be. He has many pseudonyms. But they're partnering, the two of them together, Atari and the artist known as RZA. They will combine their forces together to create new music based on, quote, based on and inspired by the sounds and music in Atari's vast collection of video games, end quote. We don't have much information on this specific collaboration between the two, just the announcement that it's happening and the partnership is going to go forward. We don't know what specific games are going to be coming up as a result of this, what songs will be put up for remixing or redoing by RZA.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, RZA's done a lot of stuff. He sampled a lot of eclectic things. Like I said, he is one of, like, the more notable drivers of hip-hop's, you know, innovation with, you know, early hip-hop, early Wu-Tang albums and things like that. you really hear the kind of strange influences he brought to things like jazz and kung fu movies and stuff. It sort of stands to reason that they would want to have some sort of partnership with video games, a video game company like Atari.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, why now? And why Atari?
That's something I don't quite understand.
It's super strange.
I mean, Atari exists as a name, but the brand really has gone through so many shufflings. It's not really much in the way of a company now. It's more just a licensing entity that is owned by a larger, very likely numbered corporation that just kind of have it, and they just license its past legacy games out for other things, remakes, mobile games, casino games. I believe there's, you know, going to be slot machines, pachinko machines, just anything you can do with the old Atari game franchises, names, representations. They will do that to literally get more blood from a dry stone.
Yeah.
But surprisingly, this is not the first time that Atari and RZA have worked together. RZA actually did some voice work many years ago in the Atari game Mark Echo's Getting Up Contents Under Pressure. Remember that? Exactly.
Yes. And the way this article is written, it also kind of lightly pokes fun at all of the different artist names that the RZA has used outside of the RZA. You know, Zigzag Ala, Prince Dynamite, The Scientist,
Bobby Steele,
The Abbot, Prince Delight, and, you know, etc. Goes on.
Many, many names he's had, but the press release talking about this announcement describes RZA as, quote, an avid video game player and fan of retro Atari games, and that he will use his special talent to craft music that will be fresh, original, and unlike anything anyone has ever heard. RZA, in the press release himself, is quoted as saying, quote, I'm so excited to work on these iconic games to deliver what I believe will be one of my best albums. I'm going to invite some of my friends to join me, and it will be game on with the first beat. Atari, also in the press release said, quote, we are thrilled to partner with RZA, one of the greatest hip-hop producers of all time. He's a multi-talented artist and soundtrack virtuoso, and we cannot wait to hear the new tracks he creates based on Atari's iconic video game sounds and music. That quote coming from Fred Chesney, the chief executive officer of Atari. So, RZA and Atari.
Yes.
Match made in heaven.
Just FYI, if you do want to see an impressive list of production credits, go to RZA's production credits page of Wikipedia. It's pretty long. He's done a lot of different things.
Fair enough. I can understand that. I can see that.
I mean, not to mention, I mean, first of all of the Wu-Tang projects.
True.
And that's a lot of projects. There's a lot of people in the Wu-Tang Clan, and each one's done albums as a part of and outside of the Wu-Tang Clan.
This is true. But we'll move on. And speaking of credits and kudos and platitudes, the not just the nominees, but the winners of the E3 Game Critics Choice Awards have been announced of all the games that were shown on the show floor and were playable on the show floor of the Electronics Entertainment Expo, a consortium of game critics gathered together. They nominate and vote on which ones they think stood out head and shoulders above the rest in different categories, and we'll bring some of those winners to you right now. And I think the most logical place to start would be with the best of show category. There were a number of games nominated, 6 in total. Nominees for best of show of E3 2016 were Battlefield 1, Dishonored 2, Horizon Zero Dawn, Sea of Thieves, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, and Titanfall 2. Again, the naming scheme of some games just kind of getting out of hand.
Yeah, and yeah, it sure is. I mean, Zero Dawn, Battlefield 1, even though it's, what, the 5th game in the series?
It is, but it's based on World War 1.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Titanfall 2, that's logical. Dishonored 2, logical, but yes.
And so Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, that makes sense. Like, they never really titled their games with numbers in them, so it's fine.
Certainly. But of those six games, only one can be named Best of Show, and that award went to Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. So the game that had so many people in a tizzy, not just when it was shown off, but apparently when it was playable as well on the E3 show floor, really captured a lot of people's imagination and made them really excited for what this new Zelda game is offering.
Indeed.
As evidenced not only by winning Best of Show, but also being named Best Console Game, stands to reason. Yeah. And if you're Best of Show, then you win every other category you're nominated in as well. It also went on to win Best Action Adventure Game as well. So a number of platitudes and awards for the only Nintendo game playable at E3.
Yep.
So this kind of one-trick pony approach Nintendo took to E3 this year.
It's a good idea.
It worked.
I mean, I was skeptical going into it, but man, Nintendo pulled it off. It's good to see them do something like this finally, like take a ballsy approach and have it pay off. Like rather than like taking a ballsy approach with something that maybe isn't that great, they actually brought something great to the table and it really paid off. So
it sure did. And they deserve everything, you know, good and positive that can come from this. It's fantastic. And also too, by only showing Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, that means they have so many other bullets hidden away in their proverbial corporate chamber.
And hell, even if they all fail, at least you've got a huge winner on your hands.
You do.
So, really a win-win. And even if anything else succeeds from that, you know, chamber full of proverbial bullets, if any of those other bullets hit their target, that's just extra, right?
More success.
Yeah.
More success for Nintendo heading into the launch of the NX in March of 2017. But other winners we can speak of, Best Original Game, was awarded to Horizon Zero Dawn. Best PC Game was named to be Civilization VI, the game that will take up even more of your time.
Yes, and another, genre, or another area that I could see getting pretty hotly contested in the next few years is the Best VR Game arena.
Mm-hmm.
And, the winner there was the Batman Arkham VR title.
Interesting, because also nominated in there was Star Trek Bridge Crew, which
did look like it had some promise.
It did, but also Resident Evil 7 shown off in there as well, and I can only imagine the heart attacks people will have.
Yes.
Again, we spoke of that before, but speaking of VR, there were two VR headsets nominated for the Best Hardware Award, Oculus Touch and PlayStation VR, Xbox One S, also nominated in there. But the winner for Best Hardware of E3 2016, PlayStation VR. Oh, in your face, Oculus Touch.
Yes. And yeah, that best action game we mentioned earlier was Battlefield 1, which won out over some other games that are similar in the same area, like Call of Duty Infinite Warfare, Gears of War 4, Titanfall 2, and Lawbreakers.
Indeed. Best RPG for huge games went to Final Fantasy 15, beating out Persona 5, Tyranny, Deus Ex, Human Revolution, and South Park the Fractured Butthole.
Yes.
Again, we're seeing Final Fantasy games mentioned in the same category as a South Park game.
But it makes sense. They're both RPGs. And I do want to play both of them.
This is true. Best fighting game went to Injustice 2. Best racing game went to Forza Horizon 3, in a very thin offering for racing games this year.
Yeah.
Only F1 2016 and Gran Turismo Sport were nominated.
The best sports game, actually, a little bit surprising that Steep took the award away. We talked about Steep on our last program, I believe, where it's that weird kind of dumped in on a mountaintop. From any number, an arbitrary mountaintop, I think there's several of them around the world you could be dumped in on and just kind of have at her and do whatever you want.
Yes, the open world action sports thing that's very much going for the Red Bull GoPro type action sports community, but
yeah.
Looks really, really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really a sport game fan myself, but I'd want to give Steep a try. It looks kind of cool.
Certainly. Best strategy game went to Civilization VI. Beating out Halo Wars 2, Warhammer 40,000, Dawn of War 3, and Gwent.
Yes.
But that's not going to deter anybody because so many people out there want Gwent.
Yes. Myself included. So.
Is it the beta in September?
Yes.
Okay. So.
So we got some time to wait still.
Whatever are you going to do?
Any number of other different things. It's fine. I have no shortage of things to occupy my time.
Our best family game went to Skylanders Imaginators.
And best online multiplayer, Titanfall 2.
And best indie game to wrap up the award winners went to Inside, the new offering from Playdead Studios, the makers of Limbo, with a game that looks stylistically not dissimilar to Limbo.
Yes, and it did beat out Cuphead, which does also look very interesting stylistically.
It certainly does. Also nominated for the best indie game category were Abzu, Absolver, and a new game that was just shown off during the, I believe it was the Microsoft conference, called We Happy Few from Compulsion Games. Looks kind of like a Bioshock game mixed with a Fallout, a dystopian society, but it's British, so it's inherently a bit more creepy.
Yes, especially when you have British children talking. Always creepy.
Yeah, yeah, that just kind of goes without saying, but one of the surprise announcements coming from Microsoft at E3 was the announcement of their Play Anywhere program. If you aren't quite sure what that is, if you missed our couple last E3 shows, we'll catch you up. It's the program that Microsoft is going to roll out in a couple weeks that will enable some games to be available and playable on both the Xbox One and PC. So if you buy it on one, you'd then be able to play it on the other. Buy it on PC, you can get it and play it on Xbox One. Get it on Xbox One, you can then play it on PC as well. Trying to expand the ecosystem of Xbox One games to include the PC.
Yeah, makes sense.
What with the rollout of Windows 10 and its free download window coming up in just a few weeks. So Windows 10, you know, big thing. They're just trying to drive more people to it as well. As I said, expand the reach of Xbox One games and maybe bring some PC players over to the console, or hell, even move console players over to the PC and play on a Windows 10 machine.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense if you have both available to you and it's relatively easy to do so.
But not Nintendo, excuse me.
Definitely not Nintendo.
Misspoke for a moment, but Microsoft said just a few days ago that this program, the Xbox Play Anywhere program, is going to go live on September 13th. So in just a couple months' time, about two-ish months away from the Xbox Play Anywhere program becoming live. Now, in the press release, they kind of said that going forward, that it would be any game published from Microsoft Game Studios would be part of this program, the Xbox Play Anywhere program. However, an important caveat that just came out on today, Thursday, July 7th, the day we are recording this program, came out just in the afternoon, is that they updated the announcement, kind of revised some wording, and instead of saying it'd be any Microsoft Game Studios published game, they clarified it to mean only the ones shown off during E3 would be part of this program.
Yes.
And those games include Gears of War 4, Forza Horizon 3, Halo Wars 2, State of Decay 2, Killer Instinct Season 3, Crackdown 3, Recore, Sea of Thieves, Scalebound, Ark Survival Evolved, We Happy Few, and Cuphead. So if you were hoping to get, say, a Halo 5, that may not be the case now. Which is kind of an about face.
Yep. So too bad. So sad.
And makes me at least question, as a consumer, how dedicated to this program is Microsoft? Because that doesn't seem very dedicated.
Is this going to be another thing that gets killed just after about a year or so?
Maybe.
Is this going to be another one of those, what was it called again, with the game making game with Conquer in it?
Oh, yes, I know what you're speaking of. That thing.
We don't, whatever. Microsoft is bad for this in recent memory. where they just kind of launch a new service that seems kind of interesting,
mm-hmm.
and then don't really promote it for a while.
Don't support it.
Don't support it at all, and then it just kind of dies after about a year and a bit.
Yes, there is kind of an audit and or review of things, and it's shown to be underperforming, so it's kiboshed.
Yes, but it's underperforming because they put no effort into promoting it properly.
Yes, that thing. That thing. Yeah, so that could very well happen to this. But we'll see as we draw closer towards September 13th. But other big news, as we've said, a recurring theme this year in North American video game gaming will be the just further and continued adoption and acceptance of competitive gaming by established mainstream media in North America.
Yes, and as it happens, one of the biggest gaming events actually of all time in North America is about to happen in a couple of weeks, EVO.
Yes, the big fighting tournament.
This year's EVO is huge. I'm told it's like so much bigger than they even ever imagined it to be. It's the biggest EVO of all time, and I think it's in no small part due to all of the Capcom involvement with Street Fighter V and all that stuff. But yes, there is indeed a big Street Fighter V World Championship happening during EVO,
mm-hmm.
and ESPN decided to partner with EVO to put that whole championship on television.
Not just on television, it's going to be shown on ESPN2.
Which is up there.
That's
not their weird ESPN3.
No, it's not their online-only outlet. This is a secondary ESPN channel, which they use to show prominent events.
Like football games all the time.
Maybe not always football, because it's football in America, so that goes on ESPN1.
Yeah, but I mean like
baseball, basketball. Oh,
the spillover football too. Because there's always spillover football.
I believe
in
America. They also use it for CFL football. So yes, football in, yes. But ESPN2. Showing the EVO Street Fighter Championships this year. Live. Not a tape delay, not like, you know, recorded back in June, and they're just showing it as summertime filler when there's a lull in football activity before the, you know, big training camps open and whatever else, or the pre-training camp workout activity. No, for any of that, they're showing EVO and the Street Fighter V Championships, which is kind of crazy. We knew ESPN's involvement already, given their willingness last year and this year to show the finals for Heroes of the Dorm.
Yep.
The Heroes of the Storm finals, but based in with teams from NCAA colleges. But this year, nope, there's no NCAA affiliations. These are competitive gamers.
Yes. Just straight up independents, not representing a school or anything. These are just people who are good at video games, who are professional at it, at the professional level, who do tournaments and stuff year round.
Exactly. And just to kind of give an idea of the scope of EVO 2016, and as you said, how much bigger it is this year compared to years last, the Street Fighter V tournament has over 5,000 competitors registered to play at EVO this year. That's more than twice the number of people who played Street Fighter IV at EVO last year, and almost double the player count of the next most popular game for EVO 2016, which is Smash Brothers on Wii U.
Yes, and bear in mind, EVO's not like three games. EVO's like 30, 40 games. And there's like tournaments for each one.
Mm-hmm. And so ESPN is going to be there just for the Street Fighter V finals, but I'm sure they will also do pre-produced packages just showing off what EVO is to the new audience who might be watching the Street Fighter V finals for the first time on ESPN2.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of B-roll of lots of EVO happening because it's a huge event,
mm-hmm.
and especially this year.
And they're going to have hosts walking around explaining what EVO is, showing highlights probably from the finals of a lot of other games as well, just kind of recapping what happens. But apparently their esports team, which is, you know, produces content for their website, will be there for the whole event. And so the finals on Sunday of EVO weekend will be shown on ESPN 2. And EVO itself is taking place at the LA Convention Center, which is the largest convention center in North America.
Yes. And
which I've been to. God! God, it's just, huge.
It, you know, just doing a quick search on information on Evo, and the brackets have been posted for the Street Fighter V tournament. And apparently it's going to be going on for, it's going to run for 12 hours, both Friday and Saturday.
Sweet God.
So it's big.
So it's a marathon.
It's a mar, like, it's huge. And one of the guys I work with, I believe, is in that tournament as well. So a shout out to my coworker, Chris Phillips. So
best of luck.
Best of luck. Bear in mind, you're representing Winnipeg, so no pressure or anything.
Bring your A game. just stick to your game plan and just remember all your training and don't take any bad penalties. And
pucks on net.
Pucks on net.
And keep your head down and or up. Keep your head up.
Keep your head up and keep your stick on the ice and, you know, just got to keep the puck out of your own end and just got to get it deep and play hard. Remember, play hard.
Yes. Always play hard.
Always play hard.
Don't take any bad penalties.
Pucks on net.
Pucks on net. Amen. That's the hockey player's prayer.
Truth. So while Evo, the big, huge tournament with all the multiple game tournaments, will happen at the Las Vegas Convention Center. Again, huge place.
Yeah, gigantic, enormous place.
God. Nevertheless, the finals for Street Fighter V will be held at a different venue because it's just the one event, the one game. You can focus it in basically its own arena, and that will be held at the Mandalay Bay Sports Arena, which is at the opposite end of the strip.
Yep.
So.
Yes, this was all explained to me already.
Oh, excellent. And you've gotten the rundown.
Yeah, I've gotten the rundown, and apparently it's like, yeah, like anyone that's, you know, has an Evo ticket can go and just watch the finals at Mandalay Bay. It's like,
That's awesome.
Awesome. That's so cool. But like to see, you know, to see a fighting game tournament in the same place that you would normally see like major boxing and UFC events. That's ridiculous.
Oh, boxing and UFC events have been held in the same Mandalay Bay Sports Arena.
Yes.
Concerts have been held there. It's
a huge venue, a gigantic venue.
It is. And this is a fighting game tournament.
Yep.
The finals. And because it's, you know, a venue that, you know, is well suited and well equipped to house, sports, live sports events and productions of live sports events already, ESPN is going to bring basically their full suite and complement of production.
Like, I want to see that production because it's going to be ridiculous. It's going to be like watching a UFC event. I've seen my share of UFCs on pay-per-view and whatnot, many of which have taken place at Mandalay Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain energy that you just kind of sense in that room by watching it on television. And from what I understand, it's going to be just as packed for this Street Fighter tournament.
And no doubt also too, it will likely be a focal point event.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So by that point on Sunday night, I'm sure there will still be some other, you know, fighting game finals happening as well, but maybe not too many. Thus to allow many more Evo attendees to then fill the crowd and show a really passionate audience to first time viewers at home.
I think that actually other things are not necessarily being scheduled during the Street Fighter V tournament for that very reason.
Street
Fighter V finals, I should say,
for that very reason. I can easily imagine that, especially if ESPN is involved.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, thank God. Okay. Yes. We will. Yes. You need this. We can make that happen. ESPN. So that is a big thing. And there's a part of me that wonders if Street Fighter V and showing it on ESPN is going to, maybe draw a better audience than what Heroes of the Dorm would, because it's a fighting game.
And most people know what Street Fighter is. I mean, they may not have played the newest couple of games, but they've played a version of Street Fighter in the past 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. And they'll know who Ken and Ryu are, and they'll know, like, some of the other characters as well, for sure.
Exactly. And also too, it's a simple premise. It is one character trying to beat the crap out of the other character.
Yes, while using flashy combos and moves and, you know, combo breakers and all those different
things. But principally it's person A fighting person B, with digital avatars. That can more easily connect to perhaps a non-video game playing person than Heroes of the Storm would.
Yeah.
Right. It's more combat based.
Yeah, absolutely.
More visceral, more fast paced than Heroes of the Storm would be, with it being a team event and that type of approach. And again, it's combat. Who doesn't like seeing people fight?
Yeah. I mean, even if they are video game people, it's still a little bit more fun. Like, I mean, it's easier to just kind of pick up and watch some, like a couple people playing a video game when it's just fighting games. You just kind of walk over and go, who's who? Oh, Tom is Ken. Oh, okay. I kick Tom's ass.
Yeah.
Okay. Go for it. Go for it. Yeah. I mean, it's easy to just kind of be like, yeah, you can do it. Yeah. Yeah. Just, you know, fireball him or whatever. Like, Hadouken him. Go mm-hmm. on. I mean, people are probably going to be, I mean, people will probably be flipping through channels and go, is that Street Fighter? Like, there's a better chance of that than like, wait, is, then like, what the hell am I watching with Heroes of the Storm? Like, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah. So I think this could be potentially a big turning point event.
I certainly think so. And again, any audience is going to, I'm sure be a success for ESPN on this event. Why? Because these events are cheap as borscht to produce.
Yeah.
Like, not to, you know, speak ill of them or whatever, but
all of the main
dozen cameras, you know, one production truck.
Like, all of, to capture the main action, all you have to do is get video out of the device it's running on. It's not like capturing a hockey game or a boxing match or
no.
Like a UFC fight where you need like 20 cameras around the ring and, you know, flipping to, you know, the different cameras at appropriate intervals and whatnot.
And with so much of this, you can just have locked off cameras.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily need an operator at every camera position, just locked off. Player one's face, player two's face. Again, as you said, video out. So yeah. You're reducing your operator costs. And again, what I've said before, for really since we started to see North American media outlets start to show these events and produce these events, the rights to them are so cheap compared to, say, what ESPN is having to pay for NBA basketball rights, NFL coverage rights, Major League Baseball coverage rights.
Yeah.
Like, to show the Euro 2016 football championships happening now. You're paying out the nose for these things. What's Evo? Like, $20 in a sandwich? Like, I'm being facetious, yes, but that's kind of...
It's in the scale of things, that's what it looks like.
Yeah. And again, maybe a dozen cameras, six operators, two or three hosts, a sideline reporter just to get post-fight reaction.
Yeah.
And
a couple of color commentators from the community, get a couple notable Twitch people
mm-hmm.
who are noted commentators on popular streams and whatnot to kind of be there as your Joe Rogan or whatnot.
Exactly.
But yeah, how hard can it be?
I was spitballing here. I think I basically just laid out the framework for a production of Street Fighter V finals from Evo.
Yeah, maybe get a couple of crane shots in there just to kind of show.
Well, you can crowd. Get a couple jibs.
Yeah, just show the crowd, show the intensity of the venue,
mm-hmm.
but you don't need tons of shots for that. I mean.
Nope. And that's just cutting in, you know, filling in between the events or the action unfolding in the fight.
Yeah.
That just cutaways, you know, player one wins, reaction of the crowd, jib, people going crazy, you know, then back to tight on player, you know, winner's face or something.
Yeah.
He's victorious. You know, commentators are still talking over him. He's reacting. He's emotional. Your sideline reporter comes on, comments from winner, comments from loser. Boom. Graphic package, replay, recapping it. Commentators, they're talking, wrap it up, throw it a break.
Yeah. When they come back, round two.
Yep, exactly. It's not a hard thing to do, people. It's not.
Yeah.
So I'm sure we're going to see more of this, and the telltale sign will be not with ESPN doing more events, but when we see other sports networks doing their own events, unique to them. So now ESPN has an inroad to Heroes of the Dorm, that tournament, and now they have an inroad into Evo and that tournament. Will we see other sports networks like NBC Sports Network pick up and try to get rights to the Dota 2 International?
Yeah.
Will Fox Sports One, basically ESPN competition, try to get rights to esports gaming events.
Yeah, and then what other new events will be created just to be put on television?
Exactly.
It's a very, very interesting spiral that we might see get out of control very quickly.
Mm-hmm. And then the problem becomes, well, then you have the competition between networks. They start bidding for events and exclusive rights. And then over enough time, the rights become expensive and then cost prohibitive. And then the networks have to find something else that's cheaper.
Yes.
So, but at that point though, the fighting game tournaments and esports competitions will be so well established with online streaming, Twitch platforms, YouTube Live, Facebook Live, that kind of thing.
I mean, EVO already is.
It is.
It already is established. That's sort of like the interesting thing about this. So what's a little bit more eyeballs on EVO?
It's another distribution outlet.
Yeah.
Does not hurt whatsoever at all. But we'll see how it all works out. So will it be crushed in the ratings by something else that comes along, which I don't know since Game of Thrones is wrapped up and so many other big event series are kind of wrapped up right now since
true.
We're kind of now in a lull of summer viewing where there's nothing really good to watch on TV.
Yeah, though Netflix is releasing a couple of interesting series over the summer, so that should tide you over for a week or so.
As you finish
everything.
I know I find myself even at a point now where I'm starting to run out of things to watch on a weekly basis.
Well, I've got all of Game of Thrones I can give you.
I would really
suggest it.
I give it two more weeks and then I'm out of Lucha Underground to watch. This week was part one of Ultima Lucha Dos.
Yes. If you think Mike the Legend should watch Game of Thrones, please email us.
info@thearcadeshow.com.
And if you think that it's a fair trade for me to start watching Lucha Underground, please let us know.
Or tweet us. We are @thearcadeshow on Twitter. But before we go into the usual spiel where we wrap up and tell you all the other ways you can reach out and touch us, one last order of business to get to on this week's show, which is the last order of business on every week's show. It is the Blast from the Past, the little segment where we dig up some nuggets, some gems, from some oddities, or some pieces of media from days gone by that you may have forgotten about. They might be sitting on your shelf and not be getting any sort of love, or you may not have heard of them at all whatsoever. But we have two items this week. One is a movie that turns 35 years old. One is an album, a CD, if you will. Back when people made albums of music.
People still make albums of music.
What a quaint notion. And people bought them. What a quaint notion. That album is turning 10 years old, but in my mind, I'm kind of thinking we should start with the movie, which is turning 35 years old. That seems to be a bit more of a noteworthy item.
Yes, the noteworthy item is a classic John Carpenter movie, starring Kurt Russell, one of the movies starring Kurt Russell, also starring Lee Van Cleef, Ernest Borgnine, Donald Pleasance, Isaac Hayes, amongst a few other people.
And it was a kind of a big cast.
It was a big cast. It was a fantastic movie. Like you said, it's 35 years old now because it came out on July 10th of 1981 in the US. The movie is the classic Escape from New York.
The film that gave us Kurt Russell telling us to call him Snake.
Snake Plissken. Indeed.
And then Snake. Really, he changed it every time Lee Van Cleef was talking to him.
Yes.
Just to mess with Lee Van Cleef.
Lee Van Cleef. The Hawk.
Yes. Don't care what his character's name is. I just always look at him as Lee Van Cleef. That's it.
Yep.
Because he just always has the same facial expression.
The facial expression and the voice. That super deep, gravelly Lee Van Cleef voice.
With so much gravitas behind him.
Few people have the gravitas that Lee Van Cleef had. He was very intense of an individual and... Yeah, I mean, everything he was in that I could think of. I mean, obviously, most notably off the top of my head, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Escape from New York. He's just...
For a few dollars more.
For a few dollars more. He's definitely Mr. Gravitas himself.
He really was. And if you look at his filmography, this was kind of the last really noteworthy, notable movie he did before his passing in 1990 or 1991. He had a few other acting appearances. He was on a TV series with Demi Moore as his daughter, but this is kind of really the last big thing he did. And what a big thing, because in this movie he plays a U.S. government or military official who really ropes Kurt Russell, Snake Plissken, into basically going on a suicide mission.
Yeah, it's set in a very dystopian, post-apocalyptic type future?
At the time, it was future because it was set 16 years in the future.
Yes, which is now, it's still quite in the past.
At the time it was made and released in 1981, Escape from New York was set in 1997. So 16 years in its future.
Yes.
However, we're now looking at it 20 years in the past.
Deep. he's basically dropped into...
Like, society has fallen.
Society has fallen, and New York is sort of a prison island with a wall all around it. And it's basically like criminals are sent there and left to their own devices. So weird criminal societies have formed, and crazy characters like
Isaac Hayes' character.
Isaac Hayes, the Duke of New York, whose car is fantastic, by the way. It's the first time I saw this movie, I couldn't stop laughing at just in awe, because it's like a Cadillac with, was it even a Cadillac or was it like a Lincoln?
It was some sort of like big 80s type town car like that.
Yeah, it was like a big boat car.
80s grandpa boat.
But it was made more ridiculous because it had like lamps, like those ridiculous, like those ones that your grandma would have in her living room. Like the ridiculous, like crystal type lamps.
Oh, like just, Tiffany lamps or something?
Tiffany lamps like on the hood. I think there was even a chandelier in the inside of the car.
I think so.
It was just fantastic car, but like such a brutal setting, like dystopian New York. New York has basically gone to hell because it's being run by criminals now, and Snake Plissken has to go in and extract the president who was stuck there for some reason.
Well, I believe Air Force One got shot down.
Air Force One got shot down. The president is kind of being held hostage. Snake Plissken has to go in and get him back. It's a suicide mission.
And he's injected with some sort of nano device where if he tries to run away, if he runs out of time or something, then the device goes off. Yeah, his heart explodes. That's it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I can't really say too much about it without either giving too much away or whatnot, but it's a great movie. It's, if you're a fan of John Carpenter, and why wouldn't you be a fan of John Carpenter? I mean, especially in his heyday, I can understand not liking some of his later movies or whatnot, but in the John Carpenter's heyday, he made some classic stuff.
Oh God, did he ever. And this is one of those movies where it was perfect, absolutely perfect on its own. And never needed a sequel.
No, didn't need a sequel. He made one for some reason.
Escape from L.A.
I've never seen it. I never wanted to see it. It looked pretty bad.
It's got Steve Buscemi in it instead of Ernest Borgnine.
Which, I mean, I love Steve Buscemi, but come on.
And Stacy Keach instead of Lee Van Cleef.
That one doesn't really make sense.
Nah, it doesn't work.
But
it still has Kurt Russell, but it's like,
He's like late 90s Kurt Russell.
He is.
Instead of 80s Kurt Russell.
It doesn't work as well.
Yeah.
No. They should have left it alone. Escape from New York is just a very classic 80s movie on its own. And you can kind of see the influence, say, this movie had on Hideo Kojima.
Absolutely. I mean, Snake Plissken was almost directly ripped off as a character for the character of Solid Snake. The concept was almost directly ripped off in every Metal Gear Solid game, where it's like this is a solo extraction mission. You have to kind of go in and do this one thing by yourself and then get out.
Like this and the Rambo movies.
Yes. Super influential. If you're at all a fan of like dystopian movies or the whole genre of
dystopian futures.
Yeah, dystopian futures and sort of cyberpunk as well.
A little bit.
This one is definitely worth watching. And if you haven't seen it and you are a fan of any of these possible things that we've mentioned, a lot of other things that you will have watched that came out later will make a little bit more sense of things that they're giving a nod to.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and also really have to mention Kurt Russell. He plays an awesome, just cool badass.
Yeah. Like, I mean, even still, like, it's one of those things that he can play, you know, a funny guy. He can be goofy. He can be silly. But when he wants to be, he can be a real stone cold badass. And this movie is proof of that.
It is. It really is. Also, the eye patch just makes him more of a badass.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, Escape from New York. Unfortunately, seems like it's kind of lost or forgotten about these days.
A little bit.
It shouldn't be.
No, it shouldn't be.
And I think perhaps the presence of Escape from L.A. and the fact that it ever got made may detract from Escape from New York. But let's pretend Escape from L.A. never happened. That's yes. An abomination. Escape from New York. Watch that instead. And the album, as I said, that we're going to talk about is 10 years old, the much younger of these two items this week. And sadly, the last album from mostly Canadian metal outfit, Strapping Young Lad.
Yes, we're both fans of Devin Townsend on this program.
Certainly are. And this album, of which he was the lead singer for Strapping Young Lad, came out July 11th, 2006. It is The New Black, which was the last album for Strapping Young Lad.
Yeah, it's not my favorite Strapping Young Lad album by any means, but it's a Strapping Young Lad album. So just by that virtue alone, means I liked it. Like, I love Strapping Young Lad. They're one of my favorite bands, personally. And it was, if you don't know who Strapping Young Lad is, well, they were a very intense, extreme metal band from Canada with a very distinctly sort of Canadian sensibility to them, due in no small part to the fact that 3/4 of the band was from Surrey, BC.
Was it 3/4 or 4/5?
Well, sort of 4/5. I, for some reason, I don't consider their keyboard player a part of the band for some reason, even though he was just with them live. 4/5, let's say.
Okay. Sure. 4/5.
Devin Townsend and most of everyone up on front with the legendary metal drummer Gene Hoagland, who's from Texas, but who's been in a million other bands. And he's sort of like one of those people where if you're into metal, you definitely have heard a Gene Hoagland album at some point. More than likely.
True. Standout song for me on this album, The New Black, but also I really kind of enjoyed the song that had a cameo appearance from Odorous Orungus.
Their classic Far Beyond Metal, which I think was initially recorded on a live album that they had done, I think like 10 years earlier, but like there was never an official studio version, but the studio version is on The New Black, features the late great Dave Brocky,
mm-hmm.
Odorous Orungus, as we said, from GWAR.
And it's funny.
It's funny, but it's also a great song.
It is, and this is one of the things you'll notice, say, really with Devin Townsend efforts, they can be absolutely intense, balls out metal in your face, but then sprinkle in humor and levity around it.
Yeah.
Or moments of calm or harmony to break up the, you know, ferocity of the metal, but yet also enhance it as well.
Yes. I mean, I think dynamics is the big key when we're talking about Devin Townsend in general with his, either his solo music or any of the incarnations of his solo band,
mm-hmm.
or with Strapping Young Lad. I mean, there's, you know, the super serene, you know, the rocking, but like not super intense, but like still like intense enough. And then there's the way over the top intense that like Strapping Young Lad is like intensity dialed to 11 at all times. And unfortunately, just as an individual, he was not able to kind of keep up with that intensity anymore. And it wasn't healthy for him psychologically and yada yada, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So he just kind of ended up ending the band and doesn't want to do it anymore. Doesn't even want to play Strapping Young Lad songs live at all anymore.
It is only with much chagrin that he does.
Yes. And he doesn't even really. He did it once and considered it a mistake because it got people's hopes up too much and he doesn't want to do that. when it's not intended. It doesn't want to give people the wrong idea or anything, which is fair enough, I suppose, but
I think the only real time he's done it to any large public extent and consciously done so too was
when reflecting upon his own career.
The Retinal Circus.
Yes.
And even then, well, that, yeah, it had to be done because strapping was a big portion of his musical career.
Yeah.
So, nevertheless, if you are curious at all to hear what Strapping Young Lad sounds like, one entry point as you work your way through their discography, or if you wish to go in reverse order, choice ultimately is yours.
I think reverse order is actually not a bad way to do it. I mean, The New Black is a good album, but it's probably their most accessible album, I think.
That's a good point I didn't consider. Well, then start with The New Black, the last of the Strapping Young Lad albums, and just go in reverse order, and then you'll work your way to their first offering, which was Absolute Intensity.
Yes. Their first offering. Well, maybe not quite as intense as their second offering.
Okay.
City, I think, might have been their most intense offering. And that's their second album. That's maybe one of the most intense albums I can think of. It's like, if you think of just pure sonic assault, City by Strapping Young Lad is definitely that. That was the first album I heard, and I was like, holy crap. It took a while to sink in what I'd heard, and it was just one of those things where it's like, once I got it, it was like, you can do that with music? Cool. I'm interested in this.
Ah, a watershed moment.
Yes.
But all great artists have those, so perhaps you will find yours listening to Strapping Young Lad. You can work your way into their discography, ease into their intensity with The New Black, which celebrates its 10th anniversary on July 11th. And then when you're done that, or before that, perhaps you'll find time for it this weekend. We highly recommend you watch John Carpenter's classic from July 10th of 1981, Escape from New York, the movie that made Snake Plissken a household name for a very fleeting amount of time, and he should be a household name once again.
Indeed.
And made eye patches cool when not worn by pirates.
Yes.
They can be worn at other times outside of
piracy in a stereotypical oldie timey fashion way.
Yarr.
Yes.
Exactly. So that is our Blast from the Past segment for this week. If you liked what we suggested, had other things in mind that perhaps you'd like us to recommend for others out there in the world, let us know. Email us info@thearcadeshow.com, which is also, again, where you can reach us to tell us, should I dig into Game of Thrones as a trade-off for Dennis getting into Lucha Underground? Email us that way. Use the contact us form again on our website, thearcadeshow.com. You can contact us directly. Follow us on Twitter @thearcadeshow. Leave us a message. Like our page on Facebook, where we are facebook.com/thearcadeshow. Or do it in the review section of iTunes, which would be weird, but why not? Weirder things have happened, I suppose.
We do like reviews. We haven't gotten a lot of them, but a nice 5-star review would be appreciated.
Reviews, ratings, subscriptions, find it all on our iTunes page. Just pull up iTunes, go to the podcast section, and search up The Arcade. We will come up. Green logo, orange writing, that kind of thing. You can find us.
Yep.
Whole crap load of episodes available.
Yes.
A lot.
Yes.
We're not a fly-by-night operation.
We've been around for a while. We'll be around for a while.
We've got our chops. We know what we're doing.
We like to talk about stuff every week.
We're grizzled old vets of the game.
Indeed.
You can hear the smokiness in our voices of age.
Definitely hear the smokiness in our voice.
Whoa. Yours has been pickled with whiskey.
Especially when I put on a voice like this.
Oh my. I feel like listening to some jazz now.
I'm channeling Tom Waits as much as I can.
Also slightly depressed. Something about that voice. That is the voice of a life that's just been through a lot.
Yes.
And we'll see if you can maintain that voice on next week's edition of The Arcade. We hope you can join us for that. So until then, everybody, good night.
Good night.